Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. The Sick Podcast. With Tony Maradero.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the ball!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoins, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est un bon dégagement et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens, le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground. Your premier gaming destination. It's going to be sick.
Marinaro, welcome to the Sick Podcast. The Montreal Canadiens do it again. They've now won four of their last five. They beat the Florida Panthers by a score of 5-3. Congratulations to Sam Montembeau, who picks up the win versus his former team, versus the team who drafted him for the first time in seven occasions. Good for him and good for Nick Suzuki, who tonight hit a milestone. It's not every day that a Montreal Canadiens player picks up over 70 points in a season. Suzuki, the fifth player to do it in the last 25 years. Congrats to him and congrats to the Canadiens on a job well done tonight. I can't wait to talk to Pierre Maguire about the Montreal Canadiens win. And we'll get to Pierre in just a minute as he will be our guest tonight and he'll join us. Not before I talk to you about our partners and sponsors, Energy Transportation Group, a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America, driven to be different. Also, LaBee.TB, brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. LaBee.TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. LaBee.TB, embrace your true nature. And also Playground, reminding you that the World Series of Poker returns to Playground 15 circuit events with over $3.3 million in guarantees, including a $1.5 million guaranteed main event. The WSOPC Playground from April 8th to April 23rd is the poker event of the season. Visit playground.ca for details. Without further ado, let's bring him in. Pierre Maguire. Pierre, how are you this evening?
I'm really well, Tony. How are you doing?
Extremely well. Always very grateful that you accept the invitation. I wish the listeners and the viewers could actually see me sending the text message to Pierre saying, I'd love for you to join me tonight if that's possible. And I don't even think I press send, and I already have the reply from Pierre. I'm in. So thank you, Pierre. Really.
Oh, my gosh. It's my pleasure. Anytime you ask, I'll be there.
You could tell. Thank you. Well, look, we're going to give the Canadians a lot of credit, but this Florida Panthers team is not the same team without Matthew Tkachuk and without Carter Verhaeghe. But even at that, it's two losses in their last two games. They played last night in Toronto. Pierre, I know the regular season doesn't really mean anything if you don't want it to. When Florida went out and made the moves that they made, I looked at them on paper and I said, there's going to be nobody better in the East. And you know what? It still may play out that way. I know my buddy called me about 10 or 15 minutes ago and said, Tony, when the playoffs start, the Panthers will be there. They're a playoff team. But is there anything to get a little concerned about if you're a Panthers fan, seeing the way it's been over the last couple of weeks here for them?
No, I think fatigue is part of it. I think the fact they went to the Stanley Cup final is part of it, Tony. I think the fact that you touched on it very eloquently, no Verhaeghe, no Tkachuk tonight. And again, hard-fought game in Toronto last night. For the first 40 minutes, they weren't really in the game. The last 20, they were in the game. But if you go back to their game on Saturday when they played against the Detroit Red Wings in Florida, they didn't just try to beat Detroit. They tried to beat Detroit up. So this has kind of been their modus operandi for a while now. So when you play that heavy, physical, nasty style that they're playing and you start to lose players – you're going to see it, especially in the second and third periods of games if you're playing in a back-to-back. And we saw that tonight from Florida. There's no question about it. I give Montembeau credit. Suzuki was outstanding. Canadian's defense was pretty solid. That top line with Caulfield, Slavkovsky, and Suzuki, Tony, they're a ton of fun to watch. And, you know, the one that I talk about, the physicality, how about the way Slavkovsky's starting to feel his oats now? He's starting to feel like, I'm a powerful guy and I'm going to start doing some damage.
So, Pierre, Caden Gooley yesterday was asked about his slash to Konechny last week in that game versus the Flyers, which merited a one-game suspension. And he said, listen, he's going after the youngest player on our team. He's a number one pick overall. And you know what? I just wanted to send a message to him. I want you to leave the kid alone. And he said, look, obviously you can't send it from the bench, and I got the suspension, and it is what it is. Slavkovsky is going to be a target, Pierre. And tonight he took a lot of abuse, and he dished it out as well. He parked himself in front of Stolarz, and the Panthers tried to get him out of there. And sometimes they put their hands on Slavkovsky. And I know that he was, you know, he had a tussle with Ekblad. He had a couple of tussles in the next game. You were seeing him that he was starting to fight back, and he was starting to get upset as well. Pierre, there's no doubt that he's going to be able to take care of himself going forward. But between now and then, and you don't want him in the box when this team becomes a competitive team, how do the Canadians defend Slavkovsky, in your opinion? Like, if you're coaching this team, he's your number one pick overall. He's going to take abuse. He's going to end up being a target. He's not the only one, by the way, because Suzuki and Caulfield are going to take some of their share as well. But he goes to some of those areas that some other players don't go to. What's your message to the team?
Well, it's not to the whole team, because I think you have to have a Wolfpack mentality. You stretch that, or stress that, I should say, in training camp. But here's one of the things. Whether you have, you know, a designated vigilante, or you have a guy like Michael Pezzetta, who's not in the league for scoring. He's in the league because he's an energy player and he can create a lot of room for other guys, and he can also intimidate the opposition defense. One of the tricks of the trade is you go to, let's just say, the best player of Team A, and let's say his name is Tony Marinaro, and you go to Marinaro if you're Pezzetta, and I'm just using him because he's a Canadian player, and you say, the next time you touch one of your guys touch one of our stars, we're not going after them. We're taking you down. We're going to get you. So pass the word to your boys. If they want you to still be around in the third period, you better tell them to back off on our guys. And it's worked before in the league, and I still think it's got some merit. It could still work in the league today.
Back off, guys. Please back off. I want no part of this. None. And if you don't back off, I'm taking off my uniform and I'm going home. That's why I never played in the NHL.
But I think you understand my point, Tony.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the fighting part of it's kind of dissipated from the game. I know people talk about Rempe and Ryan Reeves and Delorier and all these guys, Olivier and Columbus. I get it. There's still – intimidation is always going to be part of hockey. But that part of intimidation is valuable. It's not so much starting a fire. It's putting the fire out. And the way you can do it is the best players on most teams – usually have the biggest voice. They usually do. And if the best player on the team's told, you know what, if they keep going after our guy, we're not going after them, we're going after you, you'd be surprised how quick that can shut things down. You'd be surprised.
Pierre, back on Slavkovsky, 5 shots in tonight's hockey game, 3 hits, 1 assist. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're Kent Hughes, you're Jeff Gordon, you're Nick Bobrov, you're any member of that scouting team, you're Marty St. Louis, you're looking at that and you're saying, what a game by Slav. And guys, imagine what he's going to be like in 3 or 4 years from now. The assist that he got, it's a pass from Suzuki. Mm-hmm. It goes to Gooley, from Gooley to Slavkovsky, in tight, the way he was able to have the presence of mind, have the head up, see Caulfield and dish it to him right away. Man, this guy's a smarter hockey player than I thought when they drafted him. Not that I saw him a ton. I saw him very little. I know you saw him a ton. But Pierre, when big guys come into the league, you don't think that IQ or smarts is going to be way up there on the totem pole for them. You probably think, I'm not sure, because they don't have to get by on IQ or smarts. They can get by on physicality. They can get by on athleticism. This guy's a smart hockey player, Pierre.
Oh, he is, yeah. And this is what I kind of talked about when he got drafted first overall, and there were a lot of naysayers. That what made me laugh is most of those naysayers never saw him play live. You know, it's one thing to say you watch snippets of it on Live Barn or you've seen it on different things, but to actually not see the player play live, I think it's very irresponsible to develop opinion on players, especially before they even set foot in the National Hockey League ring. And the problem we have now, Tony, in hockey, you got a lot of people who are claiming to be experts, especially in the draft, and they're taking most of their information from the internet without having really been in the ranks. And it's really unfortunate because I think it paints sometimes too positive a picture about a player or too negative a picture about a player. And in Slafkovský's case, I can tell you he was playing as a third and fourth line player in Turku. He wasn't getting any power play time. And unless you were there watching practice or watching a lot of the games, especially mop-up time at the end of games, you weren't seeing him play a lot. You just weren't. So you had to spend time there watching him. And I give the Canes a lot of credit because all the time that I was there, one guy I saw a lot was Marty Lapointe. I saw Marty there a ton.
Pierre, I'm glad you said what you said. And you know what? I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. I'm going to put the cards on the table, all right? I don't pretend to watch a lot of these kids, and I'm honest about it. But other people that do the same type of job that I do or work radio or work television, have a podcast, and say that they watch all these kids, but yet they say that they stay home every night to watch all the NHL games or they go to the rink to watch the NHL games. You can't do everything at the same time. It's BS. And to go watch a lot of these games, well, you got to go out of town. And a lot of these people are always in town. And so, look, I watch them at the World Juniors every chance I get. I watch them at the World Championships every chance I get. I'm doing both of them on television. And every now and then, I have a few people that I know that have Instat and are subscribed. And they'll take a couple of snippets of clips and they'll send them to me. But I don't watch any of these kids live. And you know what? Neither do 98% of the media. But listening to them talk when the draft comes around, you get the feeling that all of them are in rinks and all. And look, I have the greatest respect for our profession, but I'm sorry, I don't buy the BS. There's not too many people that are in those rinks and watching them live. And that's the truth. You can't be everywhere at the same time. And I'm glad you said it, Pierre. And I know that you're at the rinks, and especially college hockey in the States and in that Connecticut area and Massachusetts area. I know that you watch a ton there, and I know when you were working in the National Hockey League, you were watching a ton of games overseas as well, so I give you credit for that. But those who are in the media who say that they watch this and that and whatever and all that stuff, they watch a few clips. They talk to a few people. That's it. That's it. Yeah.
No, it's fair. The other part is analytics has played a big role in this too. And I'm not knocking, I'm just saying that I'm a bigger believer in the eye test than the numbers test. And hey, listen, everybody's got their own opinion on it. I know one thing, there's yet to be a team. Now, I could be proven wrong this year because especially the Edmonton Oilers are in the hunt. They got a chance. There's no team that's won the Stanley Cup that's straight analytics. They've based all their decision based on analytics. There's not one team that's done it yet. Carolina tried, Buffalo tried forever. Toronto tried, Edmonton tried. There are a lot of teams that have tried. They haven't been able to do it. We'll see whether, you know, a team can do it. But I would say this. Scouting is really the most underrated thing in hockey. And I think it's the most underrated thing because we have a sport that doesn't have out of bounds. And we got a sport that's really about intimidation. And we got a sport where you can be a really fast guy and be a good player, or you can be a medium-paced guy and be a good player if your brain works faster than the other guys. So there's a lot of different intangibles in our sport that make it so much more difficult to scout, and that's why I think scouts are so underrated.
So if I was working for you and you were working for an NHL team and I was your analytics guy and you wanted to have some information on some of the analytics – which one or two are ones that would be important to you that you'd really want to know?
Possession numbers would be important because that would show a player's ability to control the puck. Clean exits out of a zone would be something I'd really want to pay attention to. Clean entries into a zone is something I'd want to pay attention to. Face-off stats, and everybody's got their own thing in terms of how they judge face-offs. Face-off stats are important. But to me, one of the bigger ones is creating high-quality chances. You know, where are your chances coming from? And are you the player that's creating those? Are you the player that's taking advantage of those opportunities? So those are some of the ones that I would look at. It's hard because there's never been an equation for this. How do you judge a man's heart? How do you judge his character? And how do you judge how fearless he is? There's no number for any of those. And those three things matter in hockey, Tony. They really matter a lot.
Yeah. Well, they got Brendan Gallagher into the National Hockey League, and they got Jonathan Marchessault into the National. Gallagher was a fifth-round pick. Marchessault wasn't drafted. St. Louis wasn't drafted. A lot of people looked at their size or lack thereof and said, these guys will never make it. But obviously, they had heart and character through off the charts, right?
You know, you watch a guy coach every night in Montreal who's never drafted, and he's in the Hockey Hall of Fame, Marty St. Louis. He didn't make it because of numbers. He made it because that guy just never quit. He had an engine that never quit, never quit. And he would never take no for an answer.
Let's take a look at the starting lineups for the for the two team, not starting lineup, but the actual roster for tonight's game. Let's start with the Canadians. All right, there you have it. Suzuki with Slafkovský on his right and Caulfield on his left. Newhook with Armia on his right and Gallagher on his left. You got two right wingers there, by the way. Evans with Yolonen on his right and Anderson on his left. White with Raphael Harvey-Pinard and Pezzetta on his left. Matheson, Gooley, Struble, Harris, Jacki, Savard, Montembeau in goal. For the Florida Panthers, Barkov with Reinhardt and Tarasenko. Usually Verhaeghe's on that line, but he was out tonight. Bennett with Cousins and Okposo. Usually Tkachuk is on that line with either Tarasenko or Rodriguez, but Tkachuk was out tonight. Lundell with Rodriguez and Loisterainen. Stenlund with Lomberg and Lorenz. Forsling, Ekblad, Mikola, Montour, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Kulikov, Stolarz. Pierre, Florida's defense, they're shaky, or was it just a bad night at the office? Was it a result of two games and two nights? Was it a result of playing a physical game on Saturday night, the way you said? I saw a ton of mistakes. I saw a ton of turnovers. Your thoughts?
No, you're spot on. That's a great eye. So that's why the eye test matters. And the guy that's struggling the most, and I don't even have the numbers in front of me, Tony, but go look at the last three games for Dmitry Kulikov. I think you'll be horrified. Really, really, really struggling. And he's a good player. Whether he's taking bad penalties, whether he's turning the puck over, whether he's making misreads in his slot area, he's a good player. And the last three games that I've watched him, and I've watched them all, he has not been particularly good. Oliver Ekman-Larsson is either here or here. There's no in between with him. Ekblad is what he is. He's just a tremendous player. Montour is more of a rover, loves the puck on his stick, likes to take advantage of his speed. He's got tremendous speed. But they've got some issues on their defense. There's no question. And one of the things that protects their defense, and people know this to watch them a lot, they have one of the best forecheck games in the league, if not the best. And they have one of the best, if not the best, cycle games in the league. So when you have those two things, you spend more time attacking than defending. So their defense really never gets exposed that much because of that.
Kulikov had a terrible turnover. He put the puck right on Nick Suzuki's stick. It almost looked like they were playing for the same team. it was not good. Montour made some pretty bad decisions of when to pinch, when not to pinch. And you saw the Canadians take advantage of some of those bad decisions as well. I want to talk to you about Evans. Yep. He's a guy who doesn't get a lot of press, but lately a lot of people are starting to look at some interesting stats and saying, hold on a second, there's something here. Since the Canadians traded Sean Monahan to the Winnipeg Jets, and of course with Doc being out and Dvorak being out, it means that all of a sudden Jake Evans is your number two centerman. He's getting a ton of ice. He gets about 19 plus minutes per game. He's on the penalty kill. And his offensive numbers are top five in terms of goals, in terms of assists, and in terms of points since Monahan's been traded. So now, obviously, they've had key injuries. He's playing a ton. But Phil Deneau showed us that he could be a 50-plus point guy, and that could be good for a second-line centerman, obviously a third-line centerman if you're going to have a team that's going to win the Stanley Cup. But in Montreal, he could have been a second-line centerman. What's Evans's potential? Because it prorates to under 37 or 38 points, but can he take it to another level?
He can. I don't know if that will be the role that's going to be created for him, though, especially when you get Kirby Dach back. The one thing I'd say about Jake, I go back to watching him play before he went to Notre Dame. I watched him play a ton of games at Notre Dame for Jeff Jackson. And the one thing everybody in the business will tell you, whenever you get a player out of Notre Dame, they might not all know how to score and they might not know how to all create offense. The one thing they all know how to do, every single one of them, is they know how to check. They know how to play defense. They know how to kill penalties. You're talking about one of the stingiest programs in the country when it comes to defending and penalty killing. When you talk about Notre Dame, their coach is a guy by the name of Jeff Jackson. He's done a fantastic job there for a very long period of time. They haven't developed a lot of elite NHL point getters. What they've established is a lot of elite NHL depth players. Brian Rust might be one of the better offensive players you've ever seen out of there. Part of that is because he plays with Sidney Crosby. But if you talk to Sid, Sid would tell you one of the big things about having Rust on his line, he helps him defend so much. He's just an elite defender. So that comes out of Notre Dame, and that's where Jake Evans played. I think Jake's probably top end is 40 to 45 points, maybe. But here's what it is, Tony, and I wasn't even aware of this. I was listening to the show tonight, the Canadians and Florida game, and I heard nobody's played more shorthanded minutes in the NHL this season than Jake Evans. Well, that's kind of the role that he's got to play, you know, and he can establish himself as a long-term NHL player if he can keep doing that.
Pierre, let's go to the score sheet if we can.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. We'll bring it up. All right. Lundell gets things started unassisted. Josh Anderson wasn't moving his feet at all. He's like he was just watching Lundell go by. Pierre, I've heard Marty St. Louis protect Josh Anderson all season. He wouldn't be the first coach to do that with veteran players. He's not going to be the last. He wouldn't be the first coach to do that with players that have a certain presence or power or notoriety in that locker room. But we've heard about the culture they're trying to build here, a culture of never say die, don't quit, keep working. And we're seeing that down the stretch from the Canadians who go up against really good teams, and there are always close hockey games here, and they're even winning some of them. If you're Marty, how much longer does this approach continue with Josh Anderson? I mean, at this point, what, there's six games left in the season. Do you just see it through and say, Josh, I gave you a pass for this season. Good players have good seasons and bad seasons all the time. But next year, we're going to be held to a different standard. Or if this continues, that you find that you're not getting the most of Anderson, actually shortchanging you, do you try and send a statement in the final six games that can carry over to next season? So it's already the message before the year's over is next year it's not going to be like this.
He'd have one of the most unique and interesting exit interviews, I think, probably of any of the Montreal Canadian players this year, because you see the potential with the size and the skating ability and the chances created. Then you get frustrated by the lack of effort sometimes, not every night, but sometimes defensively. You get frustrated sometimes with a lack of pursuit on the forecheck. So this is a guy that I think you would probably spend time with video and saying, here are the really good things that you do. And you show him maybe 35 or 40 seconds of the really good things that he does. Then you show him maybe a minute to a minute and a half of some of the things you don't like or you're not that enraptured by. And you say, for you to have a good season next year, we got to eliminate half of that minute and 30 seconds. And we got to get that down to maybe 45 seconds of bad stuff. And on the other side, we showed you 35 seconds. We got to get that up to a minute. You know, we got to get up to 60 seconds, double it almost. And basically what you got, I think with a player like that, and I've known him, especially when he was ripping it up in Columbus, got to know him really well. When you have a player like that, I think confidence is a big part of this. So there's different ways to motivate. And I think one of the ways of motivating him would be to show him the real good and then to show him the not so good and say, we've got to eliminate half of the not so good and increase the good by half. And if we can, you're going to be a really good player for us. So how are we going to do that this summer? And you basically said, we want to work with you. How are we going to do it together? I think that's probably the best way of doing it with him. Some guys you just got to whack. I don't think you got to do that with him.
Pierre, one guy who is as big as Anderson is Armia, who is tough to move in front of the net as much as Anderson is Armia, can protect the puck as good or better than Anderson is Armia, who's got as good a shot, if not a better shot. Actually, I think it's better than Anderson is Armia. He's really turned it around in the last couple of months. We'll go back to the score sheet here. We'll see that Joel Armia ties the hockey game at one for the Canadians, 56 seconds after, right off of an assist from its new hook that starts it with an entry, and then to Pezzetta, who shoots, and the rebound goes there for Armia. Pierre, Armia has been open about seeking out a mental performance coach outside of the Canadiens organization. They have their own sports psychologist, of course, but he went, he hired his own mental performance coach. Caden Primo has done the same thing, and lo and behold, both of them have had really a very good season for the Canadiens. Josh Anderson was asked about it and said, hey, Armia went out and got himself a mental performance coach. Caden Primo went out and got himself a mental performance coach. What do you think? And Anderson said, I don't think I need that. Which leads me to believe that he's happy with his performances. I mean, I don't know which other way we could spin it.
I don't think he'd be happy, though. He looks at the numbers. Whenever you hear players say, I don't read the paper, I don't look at the statistics, they're not telling you the truth. Their nose is growing. They all know what their numbers are, and they all read. And they listen a lot more to than what you would think. So I can tell you this. I remember coaching in the NHL and having an owner tell me, I want to hire this guy that works with golfers. He's a mental strength coach. That's what they called him at the time. And I want to bring him in to work with our players. They said, I'm all for it. I agree. Let's do that. Let's take away all the excuses from the players that might be struggling and let's empower the guys that really want to do this. The owner was totally on board. And I was on board with the owner. And most of the team wanted to do it. But there were a couple, Tony, that said, no, they don't want to do it. They basically thought it was witchcraft because that's kind of how they grew up. So I understand there's this protective nature for a lot of players in the league saying, you know, I made it this far because I'm fit, I'm strong, I'm fast, and I'm mentally tough. And I don't need somebody to tell me stuff, especially when it comes to dealing with my head. I don't agree with that, but I'm just telling you that's probably most of the mindset of more people than you think in the NHL.
I hear you. Well, you can impose that, but I mean, Anderson clearly needs every little bit of an advantage that he can get. So would you make a recommendation?
I would, actually. That's why I said I thought he'd be one of the most unique guys at the end of the year debrief on the exit interview. There'd be a lot of things that I'd be recommending. But the number one thing I would do if I was asked, how would you present it? The best way to present it is, how are we going to do this together? How can I help you? And you just tell me what you need, and I'm going to do it for you. But I need to know how we're going to do this together because we're in it together. And I think once you throw a player out in the deep end of the pool and he doesn't have a life jacket and he doesn't swim real well, it's not going to be good. So you throw him in the deep end of the pool, but you make sure he's got access to a life jacket. And that's why you work together.
Back to the score sheet. All right, there you have it. Barkov an awesome play by him.
Tarasenko.
Yeah, Tarasenko to Barkov, and a quick move in front on Samuel Montembeau to the back end. By the way, his numbers versus the Canadiens, Barkov's numbers are absolutely sick. In the second period, it's Suzuki unassisted on that giveaway from Kulikov that we talked about. Then Suzuki on the power play redirects Michael Matheson's shot, deflects it, and it's just, you know, when you're hot, you're hot. Nick Suzuki, by the way, let's bring up some stats that I was able to find on Twitter after the game. This coming from Guillaume Villemaire, who's the statistician for TVA Sports. Captains in Montreal Canadiens history with a season of 30-plus goals and 70-plus points. Suzuki thus far with 32 goals and 71 points. Pierre Turgeon in 95-96, 38 goals, 96 points. Jean Béliveau in 68-69, 33 goals and 82 points. Pierre, that's pretty good company.
Two of those guys are in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
And the other one will be one day. And the other one will be one day, Pierre.
I think a lot of people in Montreal asked me, and I think you, whether I thought Nick Suzuki or whether you thought Nick Suzuki was a number one center.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, oh, yeah, he is. And I know you did as well.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Tony. I mean, it takes a lot to impress people, I guess, in Montreal, but he's really a special player. Mark Bergevin will never get enough credit for that, but he was the player that Mark helped get. I think Canadians asked actually for Cody Glass before.
They did.
And Vegas didn't want to do it. But when Mark got him, they knew how good he was, which was really good, you know, obviously.
Yeah, he gave him that 8-year contract at $7.875 million per year pretty early. And a lot of people said, whoa, this is early for a relatively unproven player. And I can tell you this, Pierre, Mark Bergevin told me before he left, Canadians fans are going to enjoy Nick Suzuki for a long time. He's going to be their number one center for a very, very long time.
Yeah, so
and he was right.
You got to give credit where credit's due, and Mark did a real good job on that. You know, there are other things that Mark and his group didn't do a very good job on, but in this one, they did a very good job.
You're right about that. All right, okay. So let's move on to the score sheet here. On to period number three. Caulfield, 33 seconds in, he goes around Montour, and I thought that Stolarz was not very quick with his lateral movement, Pierre, correct me if I'm wrong, from left to right, but he's able to jam it in the near post on that play when they went from Suzuki to Gouley to Slafkovský to Caulfield. Evans with a shorthanded goal, that's the pinch from Brandon Montour, and then a shorthanded goal from Bennett, who went around Jack Eye, and then everyone was just looking at him. Pierre, if you can visualize that Bennett goal for a second, he goes around Jack Eye, and then, you know, we've been talking about the Canadians like to play man-to-man, and most teams, of course, in the National Hockey League tend to play a zone. But when you hear the Canadians play man-to-man defense, what do you think about that? And if that's the case, I mean, is there a switch that's made? You're playing man-to-man, something happens, then all of a sudden you switch to a zone? Because if you're always playing man-to-man, I guess Jack Guy's got a follow in this case. Does he not?
Yeah, he does, unless he makes a switch call.
Yeah.
It's hard to make a switch call around the net. If you remember, Bennett went right around the net, so he was sweeping around to create more energy with his blades, try to get some attack at the net. But what happened there, I think more than anything else, was a shorthand situation, and you had guys that aren't usually on the power play, especially at that time. Marty was playing nice at the end. He didn't put his top guys on the ice for the power play, and so that's what happened there. Bennett just found a dead spot in coverage and ripped. That was a heck of a shot by Sam Bennett. And by the way, Tony, he might be the player in the league that nobody likes to play against. He might be the nastiest guy in the league right now to play against. He really might be.
Really, eh?
Yeah. If you get the tape of Saturday afternoon's game between Detroit and Florida, you watch that game and you'll see what I'm talking about. I've seen a lot of crazy stuff. He was just going after guys, and he did it against Boston as well. He went right after Hampus Lindholm. It's just – he gets his role. He really does, and he fits perfectly on that team. I think every general manager in the league would like to have him back. It was a bad move by Calgary to get rid of him, and I'll just tell you right now, he's become one of the bigger tough guys to play against in the NHL because he can really play. He can really play, Tony.
So, Pierre, on this particular night, the Canadians competed physically, matched Florida physically, competed with them physically, and actually out-hit them in this hockey game. I think it's no coincidence that Florida and Vegas went to the Stanley Cup final last year. They got a lot of big boys, Vegas more so on defense, Florida a lot up top. They're hard players and hard teams to play against, and many people consider them as serious Stanley Cup contenders again this year. Going forward, though, I take a look at Florida down the middle. Barkov, 6'4", Bennett, 6'1", Lundell, 6'1", Stenlin, 6'5". I take a look at them on the wings. Verhaeghe, 6'2", Reinhardt, 6'2", Tkachuk, 6'2", Lehtonen, 6'3", Tarasenko, 6'1", not overly physical, but they're all big with the exception of maybe Lomberg.
Cousins and Lomberg.
And maybe to a lesser, maybe even Rodriguez is probably 5'11". Yeah. But that's a big team. Now take a look at the Canadians. Suzuki, 5'11". Newhook, 5'11". Gallagher, 5'9". Arvi Pinard, 5'9". Cole Caulfield, 5'7". Tops, 5'8". The two best offensive players the best offensive player that they have in Laval right now is probably the most talent is probably Farrell. Farrell's small. He's playing on the wing. Pierre, how many small guys can you have on a team at the same time and realistically think that you can be a contender? Now, this is going to clean up over the next couple of years. Like you would imagine, and 3 years from now, when Gallagher's contract is over, they'll move on. Rafael Arvi Pinard is a role player on this team. He could be expendable going forward. But are you at all concerned that they have a lot of small players on this team?
And don't forget Lane Hudson's coming too.
And Lane Hudson's coming on the blue line.
Don't forget that. But I will say this, he'll make you happy. You'll be happy with it. It'll make you happy.
Would you have a quota, Pierre? Like would you want to have one per line, or would you have two in the fourth
position? I think I use 5'11" probably as the Mendoza line. And I think maybe if you have three guys 5'11" or a little less, that's a lot. But in the case of the Canadians, if those players have a lot of speed or a lot of skill and could be game breakers, that's different. It's hard now. You talked about Florida. You go look at the roster of Vegas last year. You know, I don't know their average height or their average weight, but I'm going to say it's over 6 feet. I'm going to say it's over 195 pounds. You know, you look at Tampa when they were winning. I'm going to say over 6 feet, over 205 pounds probably. You look at St. Louis the year they beat Boston. St. Louis was a really big team. You look at Washington. I did all those games. For 20
Boston years, and Boston in 2011, yeah, Boston saying. In 2011. Yeah.
You know, I did all those games for 20 years, Stanley Cup finals. And you see all those teams, they're big teams. Small teams don't win, and people can say whatever they want about the numbers. And that. I'm just telling you, the small guys don't win on the playoffs. Not after you go through three rounds, you get to the fourth and you have to play a game seven. Bigger teams more times are not going to win. They just are.
Yeah. I think the year the Capitals won the Cup was probably the biggest team that they ever had in the last
time. People forget, like, Devontae Smith-Pelly was playing as a fourth-line winger there, and he was gigantic. He was running over people. You know, Lars Eller was playing in the three-hole. You know, you've been around Lars. Lars is a big man. He's a big
6'3". Yeah.
I'm just telling you, you go down the line. People see TJ Oshie, they don't realize he's a tall guy, but he's thick. Like, he's a powerful guy. So Ovechkin was playing at probably 230. You know, there's some. I'm telling you, Backstrom was over 200. So you look at it; they're big guy. They were a big team.
So, I think it's safe to say, based on this discussion, that at Suzuki, Caulfield, Newhook, at the forward position. They probably got to stop there going forward over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I would say
they get better and better.
Yeah, but that's why when they took Slavkovsky, I know a lot of, and this is not a knock on anybody because I'm a fan of the kid. He's doing really well in Arizona right now. Everybody's like, Logan Cooley. I'm just telling you right now, I was doing the draft for a television network, and I said, no, they got to get big, man. They need big people. And it's like, as much as I think Logan Cooley's a really good player and an awesome kid, and he is, he's all of those things, I don't think he's ever going to be as durable as Slavkovsky is. I don't think he's going to create as much mayhem as Slavkovsky does.
So I had this chat, as a matter of fact, with Jean-Charles Lajoie earlier this evening on TVA Sports. Once again, I don't watch a lot of these kids. I watch highlights. I speak to a couple of scouts. Based on what I'm hearing about Aginla, at around 6'1", thick, plays a game similar to what his dad played. If they end up getting the eighth pick and he's still around, you need players like that. If I can get Aginla in my top six,
he's in the top
to join the Canadiens on the third line or the fourth line over the next couple of years. You start adding some of that sandpaper, are you not?
Yeah, no, he's in their wheelhouse. The one thing I'd say, Cole Iserman is going to be a very intriguing commodity if he's still around. He's kind of sliding a little bit right now. For whatever reason, I don't know why. I'm just telling you, Tony, I've watched him a long time. All he does is score. There's still 1 point for every goal you score. You need to outscore the other team to win. And he can score. And I don't know what's gone on with the scouts and him, but something's gone on. I would just say he's going to Boston University. I don't know if Macklin Celebrini's going back there or not. I have no idea. You know, Owen Power showed that you can be a first overall pick and still go back to school and come out the next year. So I don't know if Celebrini's going to do that or not. I have no idea. But if he goes back to Boston University and Cole Iserman's there, I'm telling you right now, they would have made a mistake not taking Cole Iserman. I'm talking about Canadians. If he's available when they draft, he scores. He's got good size. He's only going to get bigger. If you play with a kid like Celebrini, he can't help but get better. Tony, if you watch this guy practice, you would know why everybody's drooling on him. He is a special, special talent for his work habits, his athleticism, his shooting ability, and his hard work. He's a fantastic player, Tony. And so if you get a player that's going to be around him, it's going to only make that player better. And that's why I think the fact, too, is that Ken Hughes' son goes to Boston University and Jeff Gordon's son, Jack, goes to Boston University. They're both on the hockey team. So you got guys internally that are actually watching the player grow. I think there's something to that.
And you mentioned that several weeks ago when you were live from Hurley's Irish Pub with Jimmy Murphy on the Sick Podcast, the Eye Test. A viewer asked a question, St. Pierre, who would you target if you were the Montreal Canadiens based on where they are in the standings and based on where they're probably going to pick and based on who probably is going to be available? And without a second's hesitation, you said Cole Iserman, and you bring him up again tonight. Cole Iserman, for those who don't know, has been scoring at a pace the way Austin Matthews and Cole Caulfield scored with the U.S. National Development Program. A 6 foot winger. And you know what? This year, Caulfield's shooting percentage is down. He's had to be a little bit more playmaker. Suzuki scoring goals. At one point, they'll start paying attention to Suzuki again. He's going to have to start giving it back to Caulfield. But it's so important, Pierre. When you have guys who can score goals on two lines, because if you only have one line and you only have a Caulfield, you try and shut him down. And so I get your point, Pierre. I get your point.
Thank you.
But all the picks they have, would you, and we're not there yet.
Are you talking about this?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. This draft is okay. it's okay. It's not super elite, super deep. It's okay. It's
How good. About next year?
Too early to tell for me right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, you could have I could have told you in 2001 that the 03 draft was going to be amazing. But what made the 03 draft so good is that we didn't have hockey in 04 and 05. So all those players from the 03 draft, they played in the World Junior. They didn't get rushed into the NHL. They went back to their major junior team or their college teams. And it set up for, you know, this draft. Marc-Andre Fleury went number one. Go look at the players. Joe Pavelski in that draft, Tony, went 205th.
That's amazing.
So I'm just telling you. So you knew.
The best player from that draft year went 45, though.
Yeah, no. But I'm just saying. Hey, yeah. Patrice Bergeron was a second-round pick. Shea Weber. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Shea Weber was a second-round pick. I can go down the line. Go look at some of the – so I could have told you in 01 that 03 draft was going to be really good because I was in it, like, deep. And then what really made that draft even better was the fact there was no NHL hockey for 1 year. So those players never got tortured in the NHL as young guys.
A scout told me, and I don't know if he wants me to say this story, so I won't bring up his name. A scout told me that right before the draft or the night before the draft, he saw Andrei Kostitsyn smoking a cigarette right across the street from the building. And when I heard that, I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah. That's too bad. Out of all the drafts, look, it was Trevor's first draft.
Yeah.
So, you know, our first year on a job, I guess, is usually not our best year. And you get better with time, experiences, age, and all that stuff. But, man, that's unfortunate to strike out on a draft that had just so many doubles and so many triples and a couple of home runs.
Are you looking at the draft right now?
I'm not looking at it, but I know a lot of – off the top of my head, I know that Ryan Getzlaff was in that draft. I know that Jeff Carter was in that draft. Yeah. I know that Corey Perry was in that draft.
Yeah.
I know that Shea Weber was in it. Marc-Andre Fleury, like you said. I think Ryan Kessler as well.
Yeah.
Zach Parise?
Yes. Yeah. He went 17th. Brent Burns was in that draft. Yeah. The New York Rangers missed on that draft too. They took Hugh Jessamine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right next to Kostitsyn.
Yeah. Yeah,
those are the only two misses in the draft.
Yeah, that's too bad. But anyway, I digress. All right, okay.
Don't forget Mike Richards. Mike Richards was in that draft too.
Mike Richards was in that draft. You're right about that. And the irony of it all is that, you know, Carter and Getzlaff were right-handed centermen right there for the Canadians, and they passed on both of them. That hurts. Andre Savard was the general manager of the Canadiens at the time. I saw Andre, by the way, last week at Place Bell in Laval. I was at the Rocket game on Friday night, and he was there doing some scouting. So he says that he spends a lot of time in Pompano, at his home in Pompano, and he watches a lot of Florida Panthers games, but he was there that night watching the Rocket. Pierre, you've talked about if Lane Hutson is able to make it here and his team would have lost out in some of those games, and now it appears that who knows if he's going to end up coming here because his team is Boston University is in the Frozen Four, that you would have played seven defensemen, 11 forwards, seven defensemen. You would have spot him on the power play. And I think you once told me that if it was up to you, Michael Matheson would not only see out his remaining contract, but would probably earn himself another contract after that because he's a point clerk. He's a West Islander. He was drafted by Florida. He was moved to Pittsburgh. He got traded to Montreal, and he's played his best hockey as a Montreal Canadian. And he could just be a great mentor to so many players, but he can also be a message around the league that, you know what? I was happy to go to Montreal. It worked out great for me. And for all of you who have never tried Montreal, you have to taste it. It tastes amazing. So with that said, in what is quote unquote a lost season, and there's six games left in the season, with, in your mind, a possibility of extending him and keeping him here for a while. And I understand he skates like the wind and he can probably play until he's 40. But why is he getting 29 minutes a game in a game like this?
I don't know. It's the biggest thing I've been frustrated. That's too strong a term. I've been saying this since probably the second week of the season when he was going 28, 29, 31, 30 minutes a game. It's not something that you can do. You know, Ryan Suter is kind of my gauge on that. And Suter cannot skate like Matheson, not even close. But if you look at where he is right now with the Dallas Stars, when he went to Dallas from Minnesota, I can tell you right now, we tried to sign him in Ottawa, just so you know, and we were close to it. But Dallas eventually eked us out. Here's what I would tell you is that his ice time, and he was told this, has to drop from 29 to 24 at almost 20. And now he's playing some nights less than 20 minutes. And when you watch Dallas play, watch how efficient he is. So those guys, and obviously Matheson's an elite skater, but it's not just your skating, it's your hands, it's your decision-making, it's your strength at the point of attack. So you have to take some of those minutes away. And I think eventually, probably when the coaches have their debrief at the end of the year, just amongst the coaches, I bet you that's one of the things they talk about. I don't know if it'll be at the top of the food chain when they talk about it, but it'll be one of the things they talk about.
I said to Mark Bergevin once upon a time, I said to him, I said, Mark, Markov's had a couple of ACL injuries. He's getting older. Plus he had that. Why do you guys keep on giving him 25, 26 minutes a night on some games that are over and you don't have to, and you can give those minutes to somebody else? And he looked at me and he said, you're right. It's a good question. It's an appropriate question. But sometimes when you're a coach and you're in the game and you want to win, you put out your best players, and trying to manage their minutes, it's easier said than done. Okay, it's an okay answer, but these coaches are the best coaches in all of hockey. I mean, they know how to manage minutes.
I did that job for a Stanley Cup winning team. I respectfully don't agree with Mark on that. You know, when you're changing players, and especially if you're playing matchup games, you're almost like a mathematician on the bench. It's about breaking down the game into seconds, not minutes. And, you know, some people say, come on, it's not that complicated. It's more complicated than you think, especially if you're winning. But that's sometimes where the saying comes, you got to save the player from themselves. They all want to play, you know, so many minutes, but sometimes you just got to say, no, you're better when you play fewer minutes. You know, I'll know when you got it going on and when you got to play more minutes, but sometimes you just got to save the player from themselves.
Pierre, thank you so much. Another great night of hockey talk. I think you answered pretty much all of my questions. Marty St. Louis will go up against his former team, the Tampa Bay Lightning. They come to town on Thursday night. In ending, because you haven't brought up Jacob Fowler's name yet, Pierre, so here's your chance. What can you tell us? You talked about Lane Hudson. Yeah. What can you tell us about Jacob Fowler, Pierre? Based on what we read, we know that he won his two games on the weekend, but the last one was not as convincing as the others. What can you tell us?
No, I would say the last one, he actually saved this team's bacon, to be perfectly blunt. Quinnipiac deserved a better fate. They're a more mature team than Boston College. Their coach, Rand Pecknold, I think should be on the short list for most teams in terms of interviews for head coaching jobs. And he did a spectacular job with his group. If it had not been for some key saves by Jacob Fowler, I would say that Boston College would have lost that game. So Jacob played really well. And I can tell you right now, they crushed Michigan Tech their first game. But Tony, I defy anybody to say, oh, Fowler had an easy night. The first period, Michigan Tech should have been leading probably 5 or 6 to 1.
Wow.
Fowler was unbelievable in that game. Just telling.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What are the chances of him and Lane Hudson meeting up in the final, the Frozen Four?
Not bad, actually. Not bad at all. Here's the thing. Michigan doesn't have a lot of superstar power. They have a lot of star power. And it's a team that's playing as a team, this Michigan team. So they're very dangerous. I don't know if Denver's got enough firepower. If they get Massimo Rizzo back, who's a really good scorer, undersized player, has been hurt for a while now, that might be able to change it a little bit. But Denver was probably, of all the teams that moved to the Frozen Four, they were probably the most fortunate team because their goalie, Matt Davis, played out of his mind. They should have lost to UMass in the first game. I was there. I was actually in the rink watching it in Springfield. UMass dominated them, and the goalie, Matt Davis, just stole the game. He was that good.
Folks, the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro goes weeknights at 10 p.m. live. The Sick Podcast, The Eye Test, with Pierre Maguire and Jimmy Murphy, goes weekdays at 4 p.m. live. And they talk about the National Hockey League. They talk about the American Hockey League. They talk about college hockey. They talk about all the prospects. They go around the entire National Hockey League. It's your one-stop shop for hockey talk. It's the Sick Podcast, The Eye Test, with Pierre Maguire, working overtime tonight for us. I feel a little bit guilty, but I know you love talking hockey, Pierre, and I know everyone watching loves watching you and loves listening to you. Thank you so much, Pierre.
You're the best, Tony. Thank you so much for having me. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thank you very much. There you have it, Pierre Maguire. It's now time for the Accent Insurance Solutions Moment of the Game.
Accent Insurance Moment of the Game.
In a game that finishes 5-3, for me, your Accent Insurance Moment of the Game, I think, has to be your game-winning goal. So I'm going to take a look at Cole Caufield's goal that was the fourth goal of the hockey game for the Montreal Canadiens. Evans had scored the fifth, but Caufield scores the goal. You know, after two periods of play, the Canadiens are up by a score of 3-2. Caufield scores 33 seconds into period number three. And they say that the most important goals are either scored in the first minute of the period or they're scored in the last minute of the period. That goal by Caufield gave the Canadiens some breathing room. It puts them up by a score of 4-2. It gives the Canadiens some momentum early on in the period. It sets the tone for Jake Evans, who makes it 5-2 later on in the hockey game. And then by the time Bennett scores, it's 5-3. The game is over. The Accent Insurance Solutions Moment of the Game, Cole Caufield's 21st of the season, 33 seconds into period number three, to give the Montreal Canadiens a 4-2 lead. Before I say goodbye, I'm going to work the chat a little bit. Why? Because Slim Easy asked me to work the chat a little bit. So I'm going to work the chat a little bit. Agnello Sammy at Master Control, bring up some questions, and I'm going to try and tackle the questions. There you have it. Work the chat a little. That's what I'm going to do. Bring up the questions. I've been drinking so much water, I need to go to the bathroom, but hey, I take this one for the team. Owen Bell, Montreal will get whoever they want, whether they pick sixth or seventh. Well, if they have several players on their list, they're going to end up getting one of their picks. But if they want one player more than the other and they have the seventh pick and that player goes sixth, well, then obviously they're not going to get him. Next. Zane, Matheson would give up the game seven overtime game-winning goal by turning it over. Nobody is winning a cup with Matheson playing 30 minutes. But Zane, he doesn't have to play 30 minutes. Look, if I were a betting man, I would think with all the defensemen the Canadiens have that Mike Matheson in the final year of his contract will end up getting traded. But I totally understand Pierre's logic. Go through teams that have won the Stanley Cup in the last 10, 15, 20 years. They all have a 33, 34, 35-year-old veteran defenseman. All of them. Or pretty much all of them. They're going to need one. It could be him. It might be him. But if there's any chance of it being him, if I'm Jeff Gordon or Kent Hughes, I say, listen, Marty, this is what our plan is with Matheson. You can't play him 28 or 29 minutes a game. He's going to burn out. And even though he skates like the wind and he looks like a young player right now, he can get old in a hurry if you keep on giving him these minutes. Pierre brought up a great point with Ryan Suter. He was playing 28 minutes a game. At one point, they told him, we're going to have to drop this to 24, and then from there, maybe you have to drop it to 20. And now he is effective at this stage of his career at an older age because he's playing about 20 or less. Would he be effective if he was playing 28 or more? No. Next. Quite frankly, says, losing to get a better draft pick or winning to raise morale, which is more important? Well, if you've identified a forward in the draft and you're winning games now and some teams are going to get ahead of you and pick ahead of you and they end up picking defensemen, then it doesn't really matter. Then the answer would be winning for morale. But if the guy, for example, you want is Aguilla because you think you absolutely need to have a sandpaper guy like that, a power forward guy like that, a guy who can score guys like that, a winger, goals like that, a winger like him, and then he's gone, well, then that's not the right way to do it. But once again, the only thing, players are not going to go out there to try not to win a game. They go out there to try to win a game. The only way you lessen your chances of winning a hockey game is you put it in the coach's hands, and the coach probably mixes up some lines that are working, dismantles it, probably ends up playing the depth defenseman more than he ends up playing the top three, ends up playing line three and line four more so than he plays line one and line two. At that point, you've definitely decreased your chances of winning that hockey game. Next. Tony, should they trade Lane Hudson now and draft a top D to get bigger? I wouldn't. The ceiling, the potential is too high. Everyone's doubted this kid. The National Hockey League is the next big step. But think about small guys that have been doubted their entire careers. Think about them that weren't drafted or were drafted later, or people said is he's not going to be able to make it to the National Hockey League. Their heart and their character is off the charts. They usually end up having great careers. I'll take my chance with Lane Hudson. I'm not telling you I'll never trade him. What I will tell you is I'm not trading him now. We'll take one more. Cam, do the Habs need another D prospect, or do you feel 100% comfortable with what's already in the system? So, Caden Gooley's here. Struble, Jack Eye, Reinbacher, Barron, and Mayu in Laval, Engstrom in Sweden. List goes on and on. I'm pretty comfortable. I would hope the Canadians can add an offensive player at the draft. I went to watch the game in Laval. Laval doesn't have a lot of offensive talent. I'd love for the Canadians to get another offensive player. One more, I've been told. Peux-tu nous expliquer le who found the dogs dans ton générique? This coming in from Cheese Time. Cheese Time, I'll be more than happy to tell you the story. Years ago, several years ago, and I'm thinking that this was, I'm trying to remember the year, but I'm thinking it was, I don't know, it was give or take about 15 years ago, I'm going to guess. No, it was 2014. I'm wrong. I think it was 2014. You'd have to look it up. I think it was 2014. But anyway, I forget the year, put it that way. Carey Price lost his dogs. And I have a good friend of mine. His name is John Mastromonaco, who owns a landscaping company. And John lives in Candiac. And Carey Price lived in Candiac at the time. His house was just recently sold, by the way. And John heard on the radio that Carey Price had lost his dogs. And all of a sudden, John's driving and he sees a couple of dogs. So he goes to pick them up and he calls the radio station. I was not on the air at the time. And he says, I just picked up two dogs in Candiac. These must be Carey Price's dogs. And I think their name was on them as well. So he was able to identify with them. And long story short, I think he left his number, or we were able to connect him to the Price family. I don't know how he was connected, whether we helped him or not. But long story short, he was able to get a hold of them, and he was able to deliver the dogs. And so during the playoffs, I started this whole thing that he found the dogs. He found the dogs. He found the dogs. The dogs are home. And Carey Price is happy. And now, knowing that Carey Price is happy and the Price family are happy and everyone's happy, the sky's the limit in the playoffs, and the Montreal Canadiens are going to go on and they're going to win the next round or two or three, maybe go to the cup final and maybe even win the Stanley Cup. As a matter of fact, if I remember it, it sounded something like this. He found the dogs. He found the dogs. The dogs are home. We're going to the playoffs. We'll beat the Bruins. We'll play the Rangers. We'll beat them too. We're going to the Stanley Cup. We're going to win the Stanley Cup. He found the dogs. That's when radio was radio. It no longer is. But now podcasts are podcasts. And this is the Sick Podcast. I'm Marinaro. Montreal Canadiens coverage. 5 nights per week. Monday to Friday. 10 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back tomorrow night. Same time, same place. My guest, Craig Button. To my sick army, my sick community, I love you all. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you to Energy Transportation Group for their support. Thank you to Labitta TV for their support, Playground for their support, and Accent Insurance Solutions for their support. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, for Agnello and Sammy and Master Control. They're Cavallaro. I'm Tony Marinaro. Me. That's me.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group, driven to be different. La Vida TV, embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.